The man of the hour is here.
Well, I don't know about that. Hopefully I'm the man of the hour on Friday. Today doesn't do me much good.
I like the ball cap.
Ah, thank you.
JVB.
That's my legacy stables that the last group of yearlings Dad purchased. That's our little fun stable.
We just heard a clip of Ali Sheba winning the Derby here in 87. What do you remember about that day?
You know, the thing is, the first time we watched the race live, I didn't realize he stumbled. And so until I realized that and watched the replay, I was like, holy cow, I mean, that was a disaster, you know, in the waiting there. So I didn't know it was as special on the first time I watched it as what it really was after the watch. And then when that started sinking in, I was like, that's just an absolutely amazing run.
You've been here multiple times since, but now you're here with a horse in the Kentucky Oaks. So it's a little bit different feel, maybe?
You know, it hasn't hit me yet because this filly has given me so much confidence. I've never wavered in the confidence. So the way she's coming in this race is it's just like another race to me. I mean, she's doing that good. So, you know, if she's good enough, she'll be tough. And we'll find out, you know, come Friday. I mean, there's a lot of good fillies in there. If Bella Fina runs her race, I think everybody is running for second. But if, you know, she didn't run the best race here last time and, you know, maybe it's a mile and eighth might make a difference. So, you know, if she doesn't run her A race, then I think a lot of fillies have a chance.
She galloped really nicely this morning. She looks super.
She does that every day. And she's unbelievable to be around. Yeah. Loves the cameras, loves people. I mean, she's becoming a social media star. She just, you can't get enough footage of her. She just loves being out there.
That's great.
Yeah.
When did you first get the sense she was special? Talking about Motion to Motion, by the way, your horse in the Kentucky Oaks.
We didn't know, because Mike and I talked about her when she first came in, how good she was. And we really didn't know probably the ability to the level that was going to be until she stretched out the first time. We knew as a two-year-old she was really good. And he ran her, what he does a lot of times, he calls it the minor leagues. He gives one start in the minors and then sends them up to the majors. And so he ran her actually against the Colts first time out. And she wasn't fully cranked. He's like, Tom, we're not working for the win. We're just kind of getting a race into her, get her out of the gate, teaching her how to run, you know, what's worth three or four works, then we'll send her down to you. And that's usually the program, what they do out there. And then when she came down here, I mean, she absolutely trained beautiful leading up to the race. We were ultra confident in her first race here. And about four jumps out of the gate, she loses her back in. She's just on the slop, and she just goes out from her. And the starter thought she was going to fall down. He's like, I don't know how she didn't fall down. But she just, like, as she gathered herself up. And then the jock, for whatever reason, he goes from 10 lengths back to head-to-head for the lead, about six wide around the turn. And she's just galloping past the horse every stride. I'm like, holy cow, she's either going to win by 10 or she's going to get beat by 20, you know, whatever, you know. And she ended up getting tired. And I think it was Larry Jones might have won the race, and it drew off, you know, by a large margin the winner did. If he just sits on her, she runs second easily under on a race that had some serious, you know, issues in the early part of the going. So at that point, we're like, okay, this filly can run. She's showing what she can do. Her stride's amazing. She's got speed. And so then we had her actually enter in another race at Churchill, and it came up sloppy again. And just in the back of my mind, I'm like, maybe she doesn't like this track when it's sloppy. You know, she's trained unbelievably on it. We got a good filly for Oakland. Let's not just press our luck. We'll go down to Oakland. The purse is a little bit better right now. We'll get her ready for Oakland. And so then we got her wrecked at Oaklawn, and we got her in, and she was doing unbelievable. And I told John right off the bat, I said, if she breaks, they won't beat you. They won't head you, and they won't beat you. I said, that's how good this filly is, John. And she broke out of there. And I know Brad Cox had that Irish Mischief in there, and they were really high on her. And he chased us all the way around the track. And in fact, Flo Rodgerou just talked to me just now, and he rode Brad Cox's filly in the fantasy. And when we finished, we won. I think Irish Mischief may have run third that day. And Brad comes over the next day. He's like, is this filly for sale? He said, I know how good my filly is. And he said, mine ain't even going to come close to yours. And so then they started, you know, conversation about purchasing a private purchaser or purchasing a piece of her. And then we were going to stretch her out. And John Corse like, Tom, man, she is such a good sprinter. What are you doing? I'm like, John, believe me, this filly's got a stride. When she stretches out, she's going to get better. I promise you. And he's like, okay. And so we ran her and we stretched out. And then when she did what she did when she stretched out, setting those fractions and drawing off, then we're like, well, we might have something here. And that's when all the phone calls started coming in. And then, you know, going into the Honeybee, she was training unbelievable. And I had actually worked, you know, up to that point, probably the 3 weeks after her allowance race into the Honeybee, we worked on setting her behind horses and relaxing. And she just, I mean, she drops the bit. You can just let the reins down and she'll just sit there and gallop behind horses and does it beautifully. And as soon as you swing her out, she takes it and takes off, you know, and just, you couldn't ask for a better horse to relax like that. And so I'm thinking, okay, we're going to set off the pace today. And she breaks and goes 22 and change. And then the Louisiana horse, Bernie Chatters, comes outside of us and starts pushing us. And I'm seeing this horse scrubbing on hers, and John's just sitting on her, you know, and her ears are going back and forth. You know, she's just galloping. I'm like, okay, we got this, filly. And then about the 3.5, I know Bizwax, Mario Gutierrez, we know him pretty well, and he was on Bizwax for Doug O'Neill. And he's like, I'm sitting behind, you know, those two horses. I know how fast we're going. He said, I'm just sitting. No, I got a ton of horses. I got this filly anytime I want her. And he said, then I saw John start moving his hands around the turn. He's like, oh, now I really got him if he's moving now, you know. And so if he just sits on her, I think we're still good. I mean, if he could have sat to the eighth pole, you know. She was just in a high cruising speed, and then he asked her to open up, and she made, you know, about 3.5 furlong run. I think that's where she gets caught. That's kind of the if we're running for 3.5 furlongs, I think we're might be in trouble. If she's running for a quarter mile, I think we're good. So that's where I think that sweet spot is. And then we come to the, you know, he didn't realize how fast he's going. He went 22 and change, 45 and change, I think, in the Honeybee. And she just got a little tired, and chocolate kisses came and got her. And then we went into the fantasy with Mike Smith. I mean, the phone rang before we even took the tack offer on the Honeybee. I had three agents call me before the tack came offer on that race. They were all watching the race. Two from New York and one from California. And Mike Puich is real good friends with Brad Pegram from Mike Smith. And he called up and said, Brad, you got to ride this horse. Mike's got to ride this horse. And so right away, John's like, Mike's like, I'm on. And he said, we'll ride her. And so then when we ran her in the fantasy, you know, we didn't go fast fractions, but they're a little quicker than you'd like. And then Brill at the same spot, about 3.5, Brill started coming on us and trying to ride too, because she thought if she hooked us in, I think that was her race to win. And I think we got that to Bart, that 3.5 furlongs, about the same type of, you know, start where they ran. And then they went head and head. I really think the way it looked to me is Mike knew he had Brill. Because if you watch him ride, and all he does is a couple taps on the shoulder, and I got Brill, and he ends up beating Brill by a length. But I think when Ricardo went inside, I think that's kind of what got us. And if he stays down with her and Brill kind of packs on the rail, I think Ricardo goes outside, I think we still might win that race, you know. And so I still never wavered in my confidence, and I think she can go a mile and an eighth. I mean, I think she's just getting better and better. And I think just the two circumstances on the race has kind of, you know, caught her, just asking her a little bit much to do for too long. So I think if she relaxes, I think we'll be in good shape.
Tom, you know, looking at the pace scenario of the Oaks this year, the Oaks field and the Derby field, completely contrasting. Derby, you're hard-pressed to figure out who's going to make the lead. They all look like they're kind of stalker closers. The Oaks field looks like there's three or four fillies that are dead set wanting to go to the lead. Motion to Motion, certainly one of the ones who's shown a lot of speed. You're also going to have Jaywalk, who's obviously very talented. And then toward the outside, Saragandy Empress, maybe one or two others. So where are you, all things being perfect, what kind of trip are you hoping for Friday with Motion to Motion?
Perfect scenario. I'd love to see Saragandy Empress have to go because of her post position. I don't think they want to get caught wide, so I think she's almost got it. She's, you know, it's either the one hole or the outside. You got to kind of make your move early and figure out where you're going to be. I think if she doesn't do that, she's going to get caught wide. So if she hustles to the lead and then one of the Jaywalks or somebody kind of hook her and we sit right in behind him, I think that's perfect. If they don't do that and we go to the front, I'm fine with that too. The one thing I think you get in trouble is if you're one of the front and they just keep on pushing from the beginning, you know. And the funny thing about these races, and you guys have all been around and watched this too, when you get these races where there's an abundance of speed, the next thing you know is just one horse out there by themselves just going slow and everybody's trying to take back and watch everybody else and they don't go after it. And then that other horse goes and just keeps on going. So, you know, whether that's us or whether that's a Saragandy Empress or a Bellafina or a Jaywalk, and, you know, it's really, I think the first quarter mile is really going to determine this race, and more so than the last quarter mile, you know, or the last eighth. I think most of these fillies' distance is okay. I think what happens in that first quarter mile, first three eighths, is really going to dictate what happens at the finish.
Talking with trainer Tom Van Berg here on the Derby Countdown, presented by Hillendale Farm. Of course, the trainer of number 8, Motion Emotion, in Friday's Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks. Post time 6:12 Eastern. Our coverage here on the network begins 4 o'clock Eastern on Friday. All that coverage presented by our friends at TwinSpires.com. Tom, we've talked before. I referenced your hat when your cap when you came on the show here this morning. But we've talked before about your dad's legacy and JVB Legacy Racing, the name of your stable. Now, this is something that you take obviously very seriously. It's an awesome responsibility for you, and you know that. Talk a little bit about that and kind of moving his legacy forward.
You know, it's kind of an odd deal for me. It's more. Not necessarily the legacy in the racing. It's more of a, son want to make their dad proud. So that's where my motivation comes from. Whether it happens on the track or not, you know, I'm going to do the things that I've been taught. We're going to do in there every morning. I've been taught to work hard. I've been taught to check legs. I've been taught, you know, how to train. And to me, to carry on the legacy, that's my part. The horses will take care of themselves. Clients will come. That'll all take care of itself if I do the things that just like he did. And so the only difference I think now is there's a little bit more social media involved and you got to kind of advertise yourself a little bit more. And he never was that, but he was always a great, you know, with lines or quotes or interviews. And he was brilliant at that part, but it wasn't the pictures and the contacts with the clients and texting and, you know, all that stuff wasn't his suit, but he was just such a brilliant horseman and such a larger than life character, kind of that all took its care of itself. You know, where I'm not that same way, so I can have to do a little bit more of the other side of it, and so I think the rest will be fine. I'm not, you know, even like I said with the Oaks is, it'll maybe hit me, you know, especially if we win, I'm sure it will. You know, when I think about the Derby and you know, I probably never saw my dad shed a tear in my life until he won that, you know, and I get choked up just thinking about it. But if that were to come to pass and win the Oaks, I think I'd probably be in the same situation going, you know, what, come on, get yourself together. You know? Yeah. But right now, I mean, she's just one of those horses. And you guys have been on a team, like if you have a LeBron or whoever, that no matter where you are, you think, we got this. And that's the way she feels to me all the time. Every day she says, don't worry about this, I got you. And so, you know, I'm not worried about that. If she's good enough, she'll be tough.
Your voice is so much like your father's. And you came by here the other day, you were talking, and I looked up. I go, oh, look who it is.
Yeah, I got his voice, and I got his lack of hair.
Do you hear that voice in your head sometimes?
I hear it all the time. Yeah. I hear it all the time, yeah. And you know, people ask me about that, how was it hard to take over the stable. And when we're doing the horses, checking legs or dealing with Sammy or talking to the riders or watching them train, that doesn't bother me because I'm so focused on the horses. It's when, especially when you're at Oakland, you're going up and down the road. You know, that was the time Dad and I always talked, was when either one of us on the road, you pick up the phone and start going over horses and talking. And then, so when I get in that truck and got an 8.5-hour drive down to Arkansas, how many times I pick up the phone, you know, I need to call Dad. And I'm like, that's when it hits me. When I'm in the barn or on the track, it's all business, it's all focus, and it sits in the back of my mind. But when I get time to think, and you know, that's when you get emotional and you miss him.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt class act Tom Van Berg, he's always been first class ever since I've known you, and I know you're making your dad proud, and you don't have to win the Kentucky Oaks to do that, but I hope you do.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, guys, always.
Good luck. Go get it done.
Thank you. Appreciate it.